Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Matt Parker from EATEF Family Support. So tell me a little bit about EATEF Family Support.
Sure. So the organization is really there to help families affected by the birth defect to get information and get support from the other parents, and to get information that they might have questions about the initial diagnosis and the condition that they have just been handed, usually. The way that this condition works is that babies are born in the hospital, and many times the parents don't know that that their baby has been born with this condition. So it comes as a shock to them while they're in the hospital that they've just recently found out about this and immediately need to start looking for answers. And inevitably what they do is they go to the internet for those types of answers. So what we try to do is put a website together where when parents do go there, they can find something that can reassure them about this condition and give them some initial information and let them get their heads straight, get them the ability to ask further questions at their medical team. Because again, this is something that usually comes as a huge shock.
So how does the condition typically affect a person?
So the condition is characterized by the fact that their esophagus does not connect to their stomach when they're born. So they can't eat. So the baby needs to be operated on immediately to fix this condition. So what happens is the mother will try to breastfeed, or they'll try to give the baby formula, and the baby won't be able to swallow it, and they won't know why until they do some x-rays and find that this is what the condition is. So the first thing that happens is the baby gets operated on to fix this condition. But once the operation is complete, there are a host of complications that the person has to deal with as they're growing up. And some of those complications are fairly severe and require continuous surgeries to deal with. So for example, a very common condition is GERD, which is gastroesophageal reflux disease. And it can be so severe that babies can choke on reflux and aspirate on the reflux. So they'll frequently need medications to control this, and often need what's called a funduplication surgery to control the reflux. In addition to that, depending on the way that the initial condition was repaired. They may need further surgeries such as hiatal hernia repairs and so on. So this is something that can really affect somebody throughout their life.
So in your time working with the family support, is there any one success that stood out for you?
Well, I would say that there's not an individual case that has stood out. What has really impressed me is the community of parents that has come together and helped each other. It's really inspiring to see the support that other parents who are really in a state of shock get support from other parents and give support to other parents when their family's afflicted by this. So there are lots of success stories where you know, there were some cases where it wasn't clear that a baby was going to make it, and the baby made it. And there are lots of those kinds of cases, and it's always great to hear about those. But again, it's really just the community coming together and helping each other that is the thing that I find the most inspiring.
So, are there any challenges in spreading the word about the condition itself?
Yes. It's definitely a challenge. Being a rare disorder, this is something that the current estimates are that it affects approximately 1 in 3,500 or 1 in 4,500. It's something that very few people have heard of, and that includes the medical community. So what will happen is that a lot of doctors might have heard about it throughout their studies, but very few have practical experience. It's something that a lot of parents start to question whether or not their medical providers are really capable of dealing with properly. So what ends up happening is there a lot of questions come in as to, you know, who's the best doctor? And of course we don't we're not in the business of endorsing medical staff, but there's not yet a clear way to direct people, and it's still a challenging disorder for the medical community to deal with because it's rare and requires specialized surgical knowledge and aftercare.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this. Matt was entirely correct that for any family facing this condition, it can be a frightening thing, especially for a first-time parent whose child would be diagnosed with this. But the fact is, early prevention, early screening, taking whatever steps you can to ensure a child's health is critical. Because down the line, what was a simple thing, it can be treated, prevented, prevent a whole host of complications later on. And for every parent, it's important to have the right medical information, the right diagnosis. And then, once you have an understanding of the problem, you can take steps to seek treatment, to We'll just rush in. We'll just assume the first thing you hear about any given condition is necessarily the correct one. Consult a medical professional, because even if they don't have all the answers, they can lead to someone who would. And there's hope with any disability, any condition. Fact is, day by day, we're growing stronger, and our understanding of what makes life, life. As we grow medically, technologically, there are more and more advancements to make things that much easier for individuals with disabilities. These adaptations can benefit the able-bodied community as well. The process of surgery for the condition, esophageal atresia, may sound like a daunting task, but what it really comes down to is making sure these young ones have a chance at a full, rich, and yes, meaningful life. The inability to eat. This is something any parent would want to address. This is something that comes down to a matter of life and death. If steps are taken, then these children have a chance to make it, survive, to thrive, to learn, and to grow. And that is the hope of every parent for their child, to see them reach their best. It may be a complicated process. It may take a lot of effort to find the right option. But I maintain there's hope, there's information out there. There's always something that can be done. It's not necessarily a cure, but it can be a step towards a better quality of life. And you take enough of those steps, eventually you find a great balance. What once looked like a hopeless situation, what once looked like a daunting task, becomes a part of everyday life, becomes part of the great understanding that having a disability is a life, not a life sentence. Simply a matter of finding the right adaptation, which is something, whether we have a disability or not, that every member of the community must inevitably do. We all have to be open to change in circumstance, to exploring new possibilities, to broadening our horizons. My opinion, disability life is the great expression of that, because an innovative mind will always find the next step forward, the next advancement. And it is not a destination so much as a journey. Disability life, it's all about taking steps forward. Steps in technology, steps in medicine, yes, steps in hope. For more information, visit eatef.org. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Winter weather is unpredictable. Drive with extra care this winter. It takes longer to stop in winter conditions. Reduce your speed and increase the distance between your vehicle and others. Walkers, joggers, and cyclists should continue to be safe and be seen. Wear bright and reflective clothing so you are more visible to drivers. This important message is from the Windsor-Essex County Injury Prevention Coalition, reminding everyone to slow down, stay alert, and stay in control.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, we heard from Matt Parker from EATEF Family Support. In this segment of our show, we'll hear from Laura Vuxen and Melanie Moore from Expanding the Circle. Tell me a little bit about Expanding the Circle.
So, my name is Melanie Moore.
And my name is Laura Buxton. I have been working on the project since it started. I'm a student at York University.
And I have been working on the project almost a year now. I work at the Center for Independent Living in Toronto, and Sylph is a partner with Expanding the Circle. So we're going to take turns. Laura's going to begin with the postcard that we've developed, and then I'll give a bit of an overview of what the bigger part of the project is, more detailed, rather, and then we'll end it off with the social media piece.
All right.
Okay, so the postcard that it was designed by Linda Williams and Two Row Tine, and it's a beautiful image, and it represents a collective effort when you actively participate and give back to your community. The Expanding the Circle project would like to invite the First Nations and Aboriginal people with disabilities to share experiences around violations and realization of rights. The image on the postcard on the front represents movement and change grounded in truth and honor. The colors are in their most basic form, representing all nations and how we touch each other. The circles represent the strength of each individual to stand tall within their own culture, wisdom, and truth. And this is on the postcard.
So can you tell me a little bit about the project itself?
So the project has a principal investigator named Marcy Ryu, and there's also a steering committee that has been developed, and that steering committee is made up of Aboriginal scholars, First Nation scholars, whichever term people feel most comfortable with using. Because the project is housed out of York University. And then, so you have the bigger body that does the academic piece, because it's through Disability Rights Promotion International Canada. Then you have coordinators that coordinate various parts of the project. And the purpose of my role is to coordinate the three sites. So the have groups of monitors that will then go out into the community to hear stories from Aboriginal First Nations people that have disabilities around the human rights experiences that they have, or around the violations that they've experienced. So part of this project is hearing the stories that First Nations and Aboriginal people have gone through in terms of the traumas that they've faced, or the barriers or the violations that they've faced as a person that's First Nations and has a disability. And the beauty with this project is that it hasn't ever been done before. The other piece of it is that it takes time to build these relationships. So it's about being engaged with communities that haven't had a voice before. So that does take time, and that's why there are three sites. And the overall project is Disability Rights Promotion International Canada, where Marcia Ryu is the principal investigator, as I mentioned before. The other piece to note is that every community, whether it's First Nations or Six Nations or Métis, have their own way of language. So in some communities it might be that they're sharing stories in terms of the interviews, but it's what works best for that community. So as a First Nations person myself, I'm very conscious of, I may say it one way, but not everybody does. So I think it's really important to demonstrate that. So that's why the part of the circles with the postcard is so vital.
So have there been any challenges in developing this project?
Well, because it's out of York University, it is a university, right? So there were you have to make sure that when these things are put together, that it's approved from the ethics of Aboriginal people, along with the ethics of the board. Then the next challenge is there's interview guides that each of the team of monitors use to go out into the community to interview people, but that language of what I'm using isn't what I would then go and use to when I'm doing interviews in the community. So I would say to an elder, I'm hoping to come and hear stories from, say, Six Nations, which is where my people are from. How could I best do that? And so he or she will say to me, well, we'll do it this way, and we can share stories with you that people are feeling comfortable saying. The biggest piece is that, again, it's hearing stories of people that have disabilities and are First Nations and or Aboriginal, and it's really hard to find people because we haven't been allowed. So I have a disability and I'm Six Nations, from Six Nations, so it's not always easy for me to say these are the barriers I face within my community and within society. So there's stories that need to be heard.
So, on the converse side of things, in your time with Expanding the Circle, is there any one success that stands out for you?
The postcard, right? The postcard is massive.
So, earlier you mentioned a little bit about a social media project. Can you elaborate a little on this?
Yes, we started a Facebook page called Expanding the Circle, Aboriginal People with Disabilities, and it's updated quite frequently, and it's all the what's going on in the news with the Aboriginal people with a disability. There's an update such as Jordan's Principle that just happened. There are stories that are being posted, like the Unfinished Business Project by Belinda Mason. She did this amazing documentary photo book and photographs of Aboriginal people with disabilities. And it's through the media that people, through this Facebook page, people have contacted us and wanted to be a part of the project in some way.
And that could be being sharing their stories through an interview, that can be sending us articles. It's about making our voices heard regardless of where you come from.
I'd like to thank you both for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great. To me, the postcard developed by Expanding the Circle sounds like a very innovative way to reach the community. It's a design that will get people asking questions. What does this mean? How does this translate into a project on disability rights? The more questions a person asks, the more they will come to understand. Because by taking the time to share one's story, puts a very human face, a very grounded perspective on disability rights. The recognition that these issues are not affecting just one group in society. Disability life is woven throughout the community. And that's why Expanding the Circle is looking for more and more Aboriginal or First Nations people to share their stories of life with a disability. To find out more, you can visit facebook.com/expandingthecircle, Aboriginal People with Disabilities. Seems like exactly the kind of project Disability Rights Promotion International would want to be at the forefront of. They're a group devoted not only to making sure individuals with disabilities know their rights, but they know how to act upon them. They're committed to improving things for individuals with disabilities, not just on a local scale, but around the world, because they recognize there is a need in every community for things to be better for individuals with disabilities. And it's not simply a matter of what we're doing in our own backyard. You need to know and understand how policies relate to each other, how the influence of an improvement in disability life in one part of the world can benefit those in another. For some of the less known conditions, some of the rare diseases, this can be a frightening thing for a new parent trying to find out all they can. And they might not find somebody locally. But that's the wonderful thing about the technological age we're living in, folks. The ability to reach beyond informational barriers. The ability to look at things in a greater, more global context. To say, there's no one in my area who seems to know about this. Can I find someone at all? The answer, invariably yes. Because disabilities are a global phenomenon. And one thing is a universal constant about any condition. A person with a disability who faces it with courage, strength, and even asks for help when necessary will be someone who finds a way of coping. There might not always be an immediate cure, but steps and supports can lead a person to move forward. It's never a matter of saying, oh, I have this condition, my life is ruined, there's nothing can be done. Because that comes down to simply lying to oneself. To believe that there's absolute and total lack of hope. That's self-delusion, which is a disability unto itself. Fact is, it's a matter of reaching as many as you can, sharing insights, sharing experiences. And that's why projects like Expanding the Circle really are a gift. You get enough stories together of what really needs to be done, and what has been done. You can affect real change. You can go to those in power and say, these are stories of human beings living their lives with disabilities and with strength. However, this is what we can do for them. This is what should be done. These are the steps we should take forward. I would encourage anyone of Aboriginal descent with a disability who might be listening, contact Expanding the Circle. Share your story. Share your insight. That is the greatest legacy we leave to future generations, folks. The stories need within our community, and decided to be that one voice, that pioneering voice that says, I believe we as a society can do better. That we can make progress. We can move forward. We can reach beyond our limits. Those are the stories future generations always love to hear. Hearing how a hopeless situation or a difficult set of circumstances is ultimately changed. Fact is, anyone with a disability who has the courage to share their story, simply living with strength and dignity, someone that I have the utmost respect for. If you're someone with a story of disability life, write HandyLink 4, HANDILINK, numeral 4, gmail.com. Always love to hear from you folks at home. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you we're all equal, so get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.